Good evening and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program here on July 25th, 2013. I'm your host, David Katzmeyer, coming to you as I do every Thursday night at 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Tonight's special guest is Hope Karen Garrett. Hope brings more than 30 years of study, research, and experience with the insightful art of Feng Shui. She uses ancient systems which reveal one's personalized energetic fingerprint to create design from the inside out in a co-creative manner with personalized attention. This creates fascinating forward momentum to manifest world aspect in order to support one's individual soul and spirit. Hope studied with interior design at the same time discovered Feng Shui, seeing it as her true calling. She has consulted worldwide on more than 3,000 projects and has taught more than 100 people the practice of Feng Shui. Her committed study of the art included studies with a Tibetan Feng Shui master and three additional Feng Shui masters. Hope calls upon many ancient approaches to create sacred surroundings and support the soul with vibrant current life of adaptant. Hope is the author of the book Healing Design, Practical Feng Shui for Healthy and Gracious Living, which has sold out two printings. Her teaching, writing, and consulting focuses on the spirit behind matter for optimum health of body, mind, and soul. Fascinating discussions with Hope have revealed that the same energies discovered to move in rhythm are the same energies she studies in Feng Shui. One realm of Feng Shui, known as Flying Star Feng Shui, integrates aspects such as the elements of yin and yang, interactions between the five elements, the eight trigrams, and the 24 mountains, by accounting for time as well as space and objects. This reveals common ground between the discovery of Feng Shui and the study of rhythms. That came as a surprise to me, folks, and I thank you for welcoming Hope Karen-Garrett, Feng Shui Interior Design Specialist, to the show tonight. Hope, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, David.
Hi, and thank you so much for joining us a little bit. Hope, can you give us a little bit of an introduction as to what Feng Shui is per se? I mean, it's become popularized in the last 15 years or so, but can you give us a little bit better, deeper, concise understanding of what it is to begin?
Yes, I'd be happy to. 1,000 years ago, there were 120 different approaches to feng shui. So thankfully, we have that boiled down to about four or five primary approaches to feng shui, but they all have the same goal in mind, and that is to become mindful of the energetic aspect of our surroundings. So there are a number of things that are related in the different approaches to feng shui, such as having more curvilinear flow to a space, and that it just invites more flow as you move through a space, or not having anything broken. That would make common sense, but you'd be surprised how many places I've been in where I've seen a picture with broken glass right across a loved one's face. And sometimes things happen and we just are busy or we don't think that it matters, but all these minute things can add up to either support us or pull the energy down of a space. So some of the systems of feng shui are more simplified, and then some are others are very mathematically complex.
So if you have it, it should be functional. If it's a clock that doesn't run, get it fixed or get rid of the clock.
Exactly, right? especially if you have a hard time being on time.
So we often underestimate the influence of the settings around us. I mean, we tend to think of ourselves as autonomous in our thought, masters of our own destiny, and yet we actually are a part of our environment. We're not mastering nature, creating nature. We're part of it, aren't we?
Yes, and feng shui is also often described as acupuncture for the home. So all of these ancient Asian approaches to creating health revolve around yin and yang, male, female, hot, cold, all of these dualistic aspects that we find in the natural world. But then it's broken down further into the five elements of water, wood, fire, earth, and metal. And each of us are a specific combination of these elements from a number of different facets of a chart. I look at a person's energetic fingerprint from 10 different processes. And so our environment can be heavy in one element or missing another. And sometimes it's exactly what we need that's missing in our home.
So you can counterbalance that. So some people tend to be more earthy. They're very strong and steadfast. Yet other people tend to be transcendent and intellectual, maybe more like the wind. Other people flow with their emotions, maybe like water and so forth. Mm-hmm. Am I sort of on the right track with that idea?
You are. And it's surprising how many times, so many times people will say to me, I'm just intuitively drawn to what I need. But in my experience of doing well over 10,000 charts for individuals, I've seen people equally drawn to what they don't need, just what they are more familiar with or what they already have plenty of. They keep going after that same element and just don't have the openness or understanding of what harmony and balance might bring to the table for them.
Well, let me put this into a practical, experiential concept. If I go to a baseball game and somebody's missing from third base, I know somebody's missing right away.
Right.
Now, if I understand what are the five elements, if I understand that there's yin and yang, I realize that there's personality aspects, attributes that are associated with all of these things. Mm-hmm. I can look into what is myself, what is my strength, what is my not so prevalent aspect in these regards, and then think, how do I see these elements in my home? Am I representing water? Am I representing wood? Am I representing fire? And then compare that to what I'm like intrinsically and think, well, now that I know what the players are, let's set the stage. And while we're setting the stage, let's add the other element of balancing against my basic nature and get a little counterbalance there too. Is that right?
It is. And we can also use these elements to support different organs in the body. The element water governs kidney and bladder. The element wood is liver and gallbladder. Fire's heart and small intestine. Earth is spleen and large intestine. Spleen and pancreas. Sorry, and metal is lung and large intestine. So if a person is having a health crisis in one of these organs, they can get their Eastern and Western charts done and learn about their particular elemental makeup. And maybe they've got too much fire and it's too much for their heart. One interesting story is that young man who was the Australian Steve Irwin.
Oh, yes, the crocodile hunter, I certainly
yes,
do.
Yes, crocodile hunter. He, the day that he died, I was online talking to other people doing Chinese astrology, and we were looking at his chart. He was actually weak metal, that's the main identifier in his chart. Mm-hmm. And he died on a day that was ruled by fire. Now, fire controls metal. He was already weak in metal. He was pierced by the pointed end of that stingray's tail in his heart. So there were three strikes against him of fire, and he was weak metal. And it was just really fascinating to watch how the universe conspires to what's called one's destiny design.
Yes. So once we understand these aspects and understand ourselves a little more, we can identify the strengths and weaknesses and understand the influences around us and work with them. It's kind of like navigating the seas. You can go with the currents or you can go against them. Well, we can go with the elements and their attributes or we can go against them once we recognize them.
Exactly. And this is why the kings of China had 2 to 3 feng shui astrologers living in the castle and advising him on a daily basis. There's a lot of depth to this art.
Maybe that's one of the reasons why someone, because they recognize these things. And yet in the 19th and 20th century, we seem to have forgotten all of that. We threw out the rule book. We're going to conquer nature. We're going to deforest vast regions, and we're going to build everything on squares. And right. To say that, I mean, you look at the cities and the grid work of blocks, the houses, the rooms within it, there's no curvilinear there. So it seems that we're stuck on a concept while not working with nature. So do you think we were out of balance for a while?
I sure do, and I think we still are. If you look at some of the traditional ways of building, let's just start with a teepee and how round that is, and clay huts. There's a Pakistani architect who developed a system for coiling big bags of earth and covering it in plaster and baking it. It's one of the most beautiful designs I've ever seen. It looks like a really large beehive, but it just looks so majestic and inviting and almost womb-like. It's really beautiful. And you're right, we've come so far from that and built all of these right angles. And the idea in feng shui is to allow energy to move, not get trapped in corners. Or people find it fascinating to have overhead beams, but it's just another opportunity for qi energy to get stuck, and this lowered ceiling height to be over a space where you spend a lot of time. And neither of them are really supporting the spirit.
And if, for instance, you have a beam that you must have in your room, you wouldn't want it to divide the center of the couch. You would want to arrange around that if you had to have it there.
Ideally, right. Like. Right.
So we're starting to understand this. It seems now that feng shui had been ignored, as well as a lot of other things. Well, it's just coming into the West now. We have an advanced system of communications around the world. But it seems now that more people are more willing to listen to the concept of the influences of energy, the subtle attributes of things, what is the nature of things. Do you see that there's a fundamental rise in Western civilization per se to be interested in such things as feng shui?
Well, something that I find interesting, feng shui has been in our country about 25, 30 years now, and about 12 to 15 years ago, it really started peaking in popularity. I think it was the year 2000 that it was the number one category of nonfiction book sales. So there's this big silent majority. But the type of feng shui that became very popular in our country was a relatively simplified system called the Black Hat sect of Tantric Tibetan Buddhist school of feng shui, or Black Hat feng shui, or entrance system. They're all the same thing. And basically, this lovely teacher, Professor Thomas Lin Yun, was a Buddhist head of this one of five branches of Tibetan Buddhism. He wanted to make feng shui accessible to the masses, and in doing so, really simplified a lot of the more classical, traditional, authentic feng shui, because not many people would have understood that, not many people would have found someone who had studied that, or even perhaps been able to afford someone who is practicing at that king's level. So he really simplified things and just said, whenever you come into a home or a room, the far left is related to wealth and the far right is related to love, and created this little eight-sided map called the Bagua. So that really, it took off like wildfire, but in about 5 or 6 years, people, it sort of fell out of favor because people realized that, oh yeah, blah, 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 that's that feng shui thing, because it didn't show up in all of its depth and beauty and glory. So I am hoping in my next book to be able to bring some of that deeper work in a more simplified fashion to the table.
Well, there may be an element here in America, my favorite country, by the way, but we have a tendency to see things simple and on a physical basis. And so it says, this is how you can arrange things. See, this is basic. This is the grid work. This is the main aspects of it, without getting into the deeper and more subtle levels. And but what's happening, I think, as the machine age is waning away, that we are becoming more and more aware on the subtle level. And so what was a short peak and a decline may just be a prelude to the next wave of interest in these kinds of energies, as discovered in Feng Shui, but also discovered in many, many other things too. Astrology is becoming more something that's more aware. The study of biorhythms is went for a peak in the 70s, came down, it's coming back again, and so forth. So just energies in general and understanding things on a subtle level is pretty much becoming more of a world trend, while the clamor and the din of the machine age fades away.
Yeah, I agree. I think this first push of feng shui was more like feng shui fast food, and now we're going to move into the more Epicurean slow food movement with feng shui. Something that was interesting when Russia was falling apart and reorganizing, you would have thought that people would not have been spending money on astrologers. It was not a necessity. You would think people would want to conserve. Astrologers were never busier. People all wanted to know, where's my place in all of this chaos? How do I move forward, you know, keeping as much of my world intact in this new world? And I imagine we're going to be facing a similar type of a thing.
It's interesting what you mentioned, the fall of the Soviet Union, because when you shuffle the deck, people are going to pick up the cards and reveal their priorities. And if that had happened decades before, I wonder if the priorities would have been as they were. But when it happened, it revealed a rising tide that I think all boats are going to be rising with this tide as we become a little bit more aware. I see that you work with many tools that come into play with your work, such as light, color, 2D shapes, 3D form, texture, and you work with a person for personalized choices of these things based on the soul matrix of each person and each home or work environment. So there's a lot of depth and sophistication to this, that the not just something that you're going to get in the back of a 3x5 index card, isn't there?
Right. It's very elegant and deep. There's one of my clients owns a chain of fitness clubs. He brought me on board about 10 years ago after working with two other feng shui consultants who were doing that more simplified level. And after one or two experiences with them, he didn't know what he was looking for, but he knew that was not what he was looking for. So then he found me in a very funny way. He spoke to an architect and asked him if he knew anyone local in Maryland who does feng shui. And this architect said, well, I don't really believe in it, but I've heard this woman is really good. So he passed my name and number along. And this person turned out to be the person whom he passed to, turned out to be a very important client for me over the past 10 years. But after working with me for 1 year, he realized his company made $1 million more than he did the previous year, and he had no new locations. This was just retrofitting feng shui into seven existing locations and his home and his corporate office. He actually had seven locations when I first started working with him. So with no new locations in the year after we did feng shui on his home, his corporate office, and his seven locations, he made $1 million more than he did the year before. And this was 10 years ago, and now we do feng shui. He's tripled his number of locations at this point, and we do feng shui on all of them and have the appropriate placement of light and color, texture, shape, according to he and his wife's chart, combined chart, and we are watching his business continue to just grow in leaps and bounds. So we use not only the physical forms of feng shui, but also proper timing. That's that combination of space-time, that feng shui at the highest level.
Well, you're touching on something that's dear to my heart because of the study of rhythms. I believe that there's intrinsic rhythms that rise and fall like tides within every nation, and the United States is no exception. And so if you're going to start out with a new business venture, or you're going to cut back on your resources, or you're going into this genre versus that genre, know where the tides are, and you know if you're going to be setting sail on an incoming tide or an outgoing tide. So how does timing affect a person with feng shui? Now, bear in mind, many of us have a very basic, simple concept of this is where we're going to place things in the building, or this is which side of the house we're going to have the door facing the south, or something like that. How does time get me a little richer here in my understanding, Hope? How does time come into play?
Well, we each have a personal makeup of the five elements of four specific animal signs, a sign for our year, our month, our day, and our hour of birth. So as I look at an individual's elemental makeup, there are certain periods of time that will be potentially more financially rewarding for a person, where they might be more creative, where they might develop more friends, where they might fall in love. And all of this is looking at the element on the day of a person's birth from heaven and earth. It's called the Day Master. And then how that factors into years and months in time.
So you are essentially counting the number of days or number of years that a person has been alive since their time of birth, because there's a sequence of time or cycle of time going on?
Yes. And we measure that in 10-year blocks and 1-year blocks and monthly blocks.
Indeed. 10 years, monthly, and weekly blocks. And 1 year blocks. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. 10-year, 1 year, and monthly blocks. Thank you very much. So these are main cycles that are going on from the time that we're born. Are there other cycles too? I mean, for instance, I know there's the Chinese calendar of 12 years represented by different animals, again, using symbols for aspects of energy. But are these the main ones? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes, the way the 10-year blocks work is a little bit more of a yang, heavenly blessing factor. And the way the 12-year cycles work is a more yin, earthly, human cycle.
Very interesting. In our Western culture, we're very much a base 10 numerical system, and we've seemed to have risen a very yang culture for some thousands of years now.
It's
interesting that we set up our numerology in such a way that has already been identified as the yang energy. Yet when you go all the way back to the Chaldeans and so forth, and you look at how the hour was divided, how a minute is divided, and the signs of the zodiac, everything was base 12. So that suggests to me, just based on what you're saying here, if I may leap to a conclusion, is that maybe that long time ago we were more yin influence in the world thinking, and as opposed to now where there's more yang influence in the world thinking. Would that be a practical concept? Yeah.
It would. Mm-hmm.
And what may have changed from then until now is the tides of energy. Just as nations have tides of energy, the entire global arena has cycles that last for thousands and thousands of years. So you have a natal chart, as you were. You're counting how long a person has been alive, and you have these cycles of influence. And then I imagine, in the case of the 10-year cycle, each one of the years within that 10-year cycle would have a stage of progression that just keeps repeating over and over as every 10-year goes on.
Yes, and the largest cycle is the combination of the 10-year from heaven and the 12-year from earth, so that as we combine them and we get 60 possibilities, everything in time falls under one of those 60 possibilities.
Well, when you go back,
combination.
That's fascinating, because the Babylonians used to have a base 12 system that also was compatible with a base 10 system, because the second most important number in their numerical setup was the number 60. And you could get the number 12 dividing into it, the number 10 dividing into it. Five was a very important number. And so there was a common denominator by which they all, integrated. And interesting, indeed. Indeed. So as you have a cycles of time for an individual, does that mean that certain times are going to be more towards a particular element? Or if, say somebody is wood, are they naturally going to be more of a wood person throughout their life? Or will that fluctuate?
Well, it's interesting because a person can be born on the day that is ruled by a lot of wood energy, but in their overall makeup, they could potentially have even more earth. It just may not have been strong on their day of birth. So it's almost like having two personalities in one. If you're born under one element but have a huge amount of another element. I remember this one man who had a bed and breakfast on the island of St. John, and he wanted me to come and do feng shui. And I did his chart, and I couldn't believe he was 72% water. It was the most I ever saw of one element in an individual's chart. So I was very interested to meet this man. I go there, and we sit down, and I start showing him his personal chart and explaining some generic feng shui before I took compass readings to get down to the personalized specifics of his bed and breakfast. And all of a sudden, I realize I'm following him from room to room, outside, back in, and it took me 10 or 15 minutes before I realized, wow, this is what someone with 72% water looks like. You can't contain them. You can't keep them still.
Right.
So for him, whenever more water comes in through a year that's ruled by water or a month that's ruled by water, or even one of his 10-year cycles that would be ruled by water, that's actually not what he needs. He will have to work even harder to not get tipped off balance and work to bring all of the other elements in even more so.
And try to give more form and structure to his method.
Right, right. Or he'll just keep flowing away.
So we have a soul. We're born with an intrinsic nature. So we're coming in with that. Then the time at which we're born adds an additional influence. And if I want to really get sophisticated, we could also say there's an astrological influence at the same time. So we could understand all these different layers of influence once we can identify the elements and their aspects of influence on us. Is that true?
It is true. I call it one of those three-dimensional chess games where we're looking at what's going on in this person's birth chart and what they need. And then we're looking at what's going on based on when a home is built or renovated. That is the birth date for the home. So we're looking at what each individual room there might need. And then we're looking at the factor of where we are now in time and what that's bringing in for the home and what that's bringing in for the individual. And I work really hard to get the home to support the inhabitants, not the other way around.
Indeed, yeah. You know, form should follow function, but form should also follow the people who are functioning. So there's
a
concept.
I describe it as building the perfect nests for the people who live there.
What a concept. You're based in the Baltimore area, Hope. I know that you sometimes will fly to all over various parts of the country to work with people. And your website is fengshuiinteriordesign.com. It's a basic site where people just can come and find a way to contact you at fengshuiinteriordesign.com. People want to get a hold of you. And you started out at this, you weren't really looking for feng shui when you began in your career, were you?
Not at all. I followed my love of fabric, of textiles, and decided to study interior design. And at the end of 4 years, I stumbled upon a book about feng shui. I had no idea what it was about. It was in the 80s. There was a little drawing of a house on the spine. And that's the only reason I picked it up. I had no clue, but within 5 minutes, I had that proverbial lightning bolt over my head, and I said, this is what I was really looking for. I had all sorts of questions in college that they were not able to be answered by regular interior design. like what is the genesis of a project, and I'll be walking away from the project after I'm finished. How do I make sure it's supporting the people who are living there and not just my taste? And I would get answers like, you know, go with a person's favorite color if they have a piece of artwork, a piece of furniture, build around it. But it really felt like there was something deeper that I didn't even know was a question for me. I just wasn't satisfied. And then finding feng shui and seeing that it goes back 3,000 to 6,000 years, different systems talk about different date. And it's just amazing to see this is why one would choose specific directions for furniture arrangement and specific colors and specific shapes and specific textures, all to make harmony and balance for the person living in the home.
And it's all being aware on the subtle level, being a little bit more sensitive to nature and realizing that there's a time and a place for everything. And those times come in seasons. And the seasons sometimes are not just around us, they're within us too.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we're becoming a little bit more aware over time. And the interest in feng shui is following along with this. I think it's going to rise and fall with tides, but that are going to be waves on a rising tide being an ascension in the emotional energy and the intellectual energy of the world, a new age of reason, a new age of romanticism, is what we're going into now. One of the reasons why we're having so many shakeups in the world, because you have to have, well, basically birth pangs to a new era. Sometimes it's unfortunate that it comes, it can be very painful, it can be very hurtful sometimes, but maybe over time, when we understand the nature of transition, we'll be able to go through changing gears, as it were, in different times without overreacting, because we'll understand that there is a transition nature, there is a cycle in things. And when we do, we'll be catching up with the past and find out that people knew this from a long time ago. Can you tell me a little bit about the master that you studied with for a while? Can you tell me a little bit about him?
Yes. He primarily spoke Chinese, so my classes were translated, and I had lots of time to take notes. He would say something in Chinese, and then the translator would translate, and people would write notes, and then the teacher would say something in Chinese again. So he had a lot of time to make sure he got all of his thoughts down. He was a contemporary with the Dalai Lama. They were friends. And he was the most spiritual person I've had the pleasure of being close to. And I've gone to talks by the Dalai Lama, but having this teacher right there, you know, a few feet in front of me was really remarkable. And a lot of what Lin Yun said was that all of these things that we put around us hold about 40% of the effectiveness, but what we hold in our intention, in our minds, in our hearts, what it is that we are asking our spirits to find a way to guide us in the direction that we would like our life to go in, he felt that that held 140% of the effectiveness. So he was purposefully not being a good mathematician. He really wanted to drive home how important this level of tuning into one's heart and spirit to connect those intentions with the items that we were placing in our home. So that's where he was taking feng shui, so that more people could use it. And that's why he simplified and said the far left is wealth and the far right is love. And he would have people put items of their choice in any of these eight areas, fame and advancement, career, knowledge, wisdom, health, children. All of these aspects were considered very important for a successful life. But whatever it was that we were attempting to bring more into our lives, he really wanted us to get clear that our spirits needed to be on board with this plan, with this intention. And so to have creative visualization. And one thing that I'll often guide people through is using a mantra for clearing any past vows. If a person believes in past lives or
if Einstein was right and everything is happening on parallel dimensions at the same time, that many times we have taken vows of poverty or chastity, and they may not be serving the current life that we are aware of. So it's a really good idea to do a ritual or a blessing or a mantra where you say that this vow is over, it's no longer in effect for this life. And that's another way of bringing one's spirit into the mix and using our body, mind, spirit to move our lives forward, to find help with finding flow and being in sync. That's just that whole beauty of balance and harmony and sensing when to act and when to rest and using the ego as the engine, but awareness as the driver.
My goodness, that is such wonderful, wonderful advice. You know, to be heeded. In this society, the affluent society, the materialistic society in which we live, sometimes, you know, I've met people who have it all with it, you know, the big mansion, the multiple cars, quite wealthy and everything like that. And yet they got a little neurotic because they couldn't understand why they weren't really happy when they should have been happy. There must be something wrong with them that these things aren't making them happy, because that's what makes you happy. And if they had heard your words and thought to clear and did a little meditation and sought within rather than just building around without understanding how things around us affect us, they might not have had the life of quiet desperation became a term. And so I think I'm really excited about the fact that people are becoming more interested in these energies, because from the unmanifest comes the manifest. Mm-hmm. So we have to identify and understand the energies. Hope, can you tell me a little bit about a school of thought that I learned about from you? It's called Flying Star Feng Shui. Can you give me a beginner's course on that?
Yes. When Feng Shui developed in China, it started in a very mountainous region. So topography became the main guide, and having a mountain to the rear to protect from northern winds and having exposure to the south so that you could feel the sun during the day, having access to fresh flowing water. All of this made a lot of intuitive, practical sense. But then as population spread and traveled and moved to areas that were flat plains, that's around the time that astrology came on board, and they started studying what happened in different people's lives at different times and different areas. And all of a sudden, rather than only using topography, the aspect of time became a huge guide. So this has been happening for approximately 4,000 years using the mathematics of time. And this is broken down into a number of cycles within cycles. There's a 3,600-year cycle, there's a 180-year cycle, there's a 60-year cycle, a 20-year cycle. In the 20-year cycle, there is a ruling quality of energy. So we are always looking at where these energies fall and whether they want movement or stability. So if we give an area that wants movement, it's felt that that can allow more financial flow to find us, whether that is a job promotion, an inheritance, winning the lottery, anything to do with money. If we identify the optimum places to have movement and give it a fountain or a flag or mobile, anything that is physically moving in 3D space, then that's what we're stimulating. Conversely, there are areas that don't want movement. They just want stability. And these are areas that govern people and health. That might mean relationships or having children. So there are certain areas of a home based on when it was built and the compass orientation of each of the eight outer pie wedges as we go into a central octagon in the center of any building. We come out with these eight pie wedges, and some of them really want what's called a mountain, something big and heavy, either outside of the building or inside of the building or both in that certain area. And then other areas will want movement.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basis of Flying Star Feng Shui, that there is a quality, an energetic quality that shifts on a 20-year cycle, and then within that 20-year cycle, an annual cycle. I mean, we can go all the way down. We can go down to a monthly cycle, a daily cycle, 2-hour cycle. But they start to, they move, those smaller cycles move so quickly, they don't quite have the same impact that the annual cycle and the 20-year cycle have.
Is there a fractal relationship of these cycles? Are they nested inside of each other, or do they divide into one another? And so forth.
You know, they dance. They dance together. And so it literally is like one of those square dances that the caller calls and they change partners. And so all these couples end up looking very different from one another. And then it changes again and it's different once again.
Almost like listening to a fugue,
mm-hmm.
as it were.
It is.
Yes, and then eventually some of them will wind up synchronizing, because if you multiply them together, eventually they're going to come to a point where they're all, many cycles are at point zero,
right.
ready to start anew, and then they go through this myriad of combinations.
Yes, they go through these 60 potential combinations.
You mentioned that you can look at a building or such as having eight pie wedges coming out. As we move through the 20-year cycle, do certain sections of this eight compartmentalized aspect of a location come more and less into play depending on where you are in time? And does it go around the clock of these eight pie wedges? Am I thinking at all right with that concept?
Yeah, it does move around, but not like a clock. It moves in an extremely fascinating pattern that looks like two arrows with the points pointing outward away from each other, but like imagine a triangle with no base, with an open bottom. So that's your point. Your two angles come into a point. So there are these two angles that are crossed with their open ends with a straight diagonal line going on top. So it goes in a very specific pattern, but not like a clock face, not clockwise or counterclockwise.
And we often construct two-dimensional models for things that might sometimes be better represented in three-dimensional terms.
So
if we were possibly, could there be a third dimension to this too, instead of like an eight-section pie wedges, that maybe another model could be constructed that would add another depth to it. Am I imagining anywhere on the right line with that?
Yes. There are some people who will look at it in three dimensions.
Fascinating.
They see the two dimensions that I focus on are driven by time, but they're found in space. And then the people who look at it in three dimensions, they look at the two dimensions in space with every one of those eight areas looked at through a third dimension of the now time.
Indeed, indeed. And then you could perhaps layer the multitude of cycles going through on that fixed space and looking at their influence as well, and you would have a very complex model indeed, would you not? But one that moves
Absolutely.
Systematically.
Yes, yes.
So
and
from
they
simplicity,
all change.
Yes.
they do, the beauty is that they all do change at the same time.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Once we can, this must have taken centuries to identify these elements and be able to find how they're moving and influencing us.
It did take a very long time, and I think probably the piece that sits in my heart most deeply is the fact that this all grew out of the I Ching, which is an infinitely ongoing, complex motion of the 64 hexagrams and how their interplay happens during time.
Yes, I understand that you work with the trigrams, which would be three lines. Each line would
right.
be either solid or broken, and the various
right.
combinations. And that was the forerunner to the I Ching, was it not? The trigrams.
Yes.
My understanding of the... Yes.
So, right, in the East, they just had all of this time to sit and figure the meaning of yin and yang and the combinations and what grows out of yin and yang to become the eight trigrams, and then how they combine to create the 64 hexagrams, and how there can be six changing lines within each of the 64 hexagrams. So it grew and grew and then turned into the beautiful tool that I use called the Lopan, which is looking at the 64 hexagrams in space.
Ah, indeed. Indeed. So we can, once we understand the aspects found in a place, we understand the aspects of energy, and we can calculate the elements of time, then the sophistication ultimately is to be able to put them all together to understand
exactly.
how things
right.
move.
And once we understand what's happening with time and space, now we ask, and how is this affecting this person's personal chart? And is it draining them? Is it feeding them? Do we need to put in a bridge so that the space is not controlling the individual, but instead is nourishing them?
That's feng shui.
Yeah, and that's feng shui in a nutshell.
It's fascinating. And understanding the person that's using it because of when they were born and because of the cycles that are within them, and understanding
right.
their geographic location as well.
Right, exactly.
And when you're doing this too, were you doing it 20 years ago or are you doing it now? That's another element too because of where they live. So, my goodness.
Right.
But simplicity breeds complexity. And it might sound like, wow, it's a little overwhelming. But when you understand that there are really basic elements in each of
mm-hmm.
these things, then you can understand the dance. I mean, you can have very sophisticated music using only seven notes in the scale.
Right. Yes, that's a good analogy. And anyone is invited to make the music as simple or complex as they'd like. Everyone can sing Happy Birthday. You don't have to be a virtuoso musician to make music. And what I do with my feng shui is I break the home down room by room, and I give a person a very specific prescription for what that room needs to make the space safe and usable and supportive for whomever is using that room. Or if it's a family room or a living room where a number of people are using it, I put together what I call that family's palette and make the recommendation. So my first spiritual teacher used to say, understanding is the booby prize. You just learn something and you move forward with it, and you know, you're lucky when the understanding sort of finds you and settles its way in. And I feel that way about advanced level feng shui, where I don't need the person to understand everything that I'm saying, but I say enough using a very simplified, direct language and recommendations that they know who they are on a different level and they know how to proceed forward. I call it decorating on a whole new level.
As Bill Moyer said when he was interviewing Joseph Campbell, the conclusion of that interview He said, "We're all dancing to the music, even when we can't name the tune."
That's great. Yes, indeed.
Well, this has been fascinating, Hope. Hope Karen Garrett at FengShuiInteriorDesign.com. You work with individuals. You work with businesses. You do homes. You fly out. You even did a cemetery in the Baltimore area, did you not?
I did. My first cemetery.
My goodness.
And Feng Shui is spelled F-E-N-G-S-H-U-I.
F-E-N-G-S-H-U-I. So when you're typing Feng Shui Interior Design, you'll have that. Yes, indeed. And perhaps that comes from ancient Cantonese or so. I don't know. But that would explain the seemingly odd spelling there. Well, Hope,
right.
I want to thank you.
It probably is either pinyin or Wade style. When I meet someone who is from China, I always have to ask, do you know about feng shui? And every time they will nod yes, but occasionally I'll have someone like look at me, you know, and tilt their head, and then I'll say feng shui, and they go, ah, yes, yes. So we don't really pronounce it in the U.S. the way it is pronounced in China, where it's more like F-O-N-G-S-O-Y, feng shui. So I'm not exactly certain how that all happened, but
yes, it often happens when we'll translate something into English where we don't have a sound that's in a different language, and so we add a silent letter into it to represent that this is as close as we could get to that. But we're not limited in our understanding and our experience, because we are all, as human beings, dancing to the tune. And if it's understood in the Orient, it's been developed for thousands of years, we can start to learn this and we can bring this into our beings, because I think that there's a natural recognition to us within us once we start bringing this in. Yeah.
Yes, and feng shui means wind, water, and so it's part of every one of our environments. It's about movement.
Indeed. So it's not static, as many people think of about just placing things here based on that or putting that color there. It's a lot of motion, a lot of rhythm, which fascinated me when I spoke to you, how much of this is based on knowing the flow through time and the cycles of time.
Mm-hmm.
That is ultimately fascinating. Well, Hope Karen Garrett in the Baltimore area, who also flies around the country for various clients as the demand brings her. And she's had demand all over the United States. Hope Karen Garrett of FengShuiInteriorDesign.com. I want to thank you for a wonderful discussion and illuminating us a little bit, that as we delve into the study of rhythms and the cycles, and we learn biorhythms of our bodies or the cycles and trends within the nation as showing up on our stock market charts, that we're really not discovering anything new. We're realizing things that have been understood and described for thousands of years. And so as the world gets smaller and our communications become more fluent, that we can start putting the different cultures together and realize that we are all collectively dancing to the same tune, whether we know the music or not. But I think we're all getting a little glimpse into the sheet music because of Hope Karen Garrett. Hope, thank you for joining us this evening here on Blog Talk Radio. com/cycles to talk about the rhythms of feng shui.
Lovely to be with you, David.
Blessings to you, and thank you all for listening. I invite you to join us again next Thursday night, 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific, on the Cycles of Change radio program. I'm your host, David Katzmeier, signing out tonight.